when I went to Saybrook, what I was hoping to do was bridge the gap between what is available in these ancient wisdom sciences with the modern processes.
Hey everyone, Nathan Long here, president of Saybrook University. Welcome to another episode of Saybrook Insights. My guest today is Saybrook alumna and integrative health practitioner, Prema Rao. As the founder and CEO of Aquila Health in Northern California, Prema is bringing integrative health to a wider audience, and I can't wait to learn more about her work, its impact, and how we can look at ways to replicate her approach. Let's get to it then with Prema Rao. Prema Rao, thank you so much for being here today on Saybrook Insights. It is really a pleasure to have you here today. For our audience, I got a chance to meet Prema in person almost 6-7 months ago in San Francisco. We had an alumni gathering, and after hearing about all that she was doing, was just like, you've got to come on the podcast and spread the good news about all of your fine work, and you're just an inspiration. So really, thank you for taking some time to be here today. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Dr. Long. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word of what I'm doing.
Very good. Well, you'll get plenty of time to do that, so looking forward to that. So let's talk a little bit about your experience at Saybrook and a little bit about you. So maybe just start off with a bit about your background before you came to Saybrook, and then what brought you to the university.
I used to work as a research scientist in the biomedical device industry for many years. And then what brought me to Saybrook is kind of a convoluted story. So it started with a dream, actually, a dream wherein I was introduced to this concept of koshas. Koshas is something that's described in the ancient scriptures, you know, thousands of years old. I knew about it, but I didn't know enough about it to really know the depth it contains. But it started my journey into understanding about this concept. And koshas, just to describe very briefly, is it talks about our existence, our being many layers. We are body, mind, emotion, intellect, and the final sheath is called bliss. So there are five sheaths that we have in our being. So that's what led me to Ayurveda and this holistic health concepts. So, I mean, I read voraciously whatever I could find at that time, and then went deeper and deeper, and then contemplated, you know, leaving my old work behind and going into this new field. But being a research scientist, that tendency to research everything, I wanted to actually experience what it would be like to be in this field. So I went to conferences, and one such conference was the Osher conference at UCSF. And this was actually in 2002, so a long time ago. My interest was heightened further at that time. And I was happy to meet somebody there. He was a director at Institute of Health and Healing in San Francisco, Dr. Larry Shervitz. And at that time, he said, why don't you come and work with me? We're producing a paper. Why don't you help with that? So I got the opportunity to go there. And that was when I found out more about this field. And it used to be called complementary and alternative medicine, Ayurveda being one of the alternative medicines. So at that time, you know, even there, it's part of Sutter Health, and they had a plane tree library as well there. And the Institute for Health and Healing work and plane tree library contributed so much to my education that, you know, I wanted to delve further. That time, I looked around to the universities. I live in the Northern California Bay Area, so plenty of universities around. But the most they could do was health psychology. And that really fell short of what I wanted to explore. You know, more holistic is what I was looking for, including the spiritual aspects. So, and of course, I was an older student to go into the PhD program. And I, at that time, I said, okay, I cannot contribute. I cannot really dedicate to going to classes and all. So I was looking for online courses. So that's when the search began. And actually, Dr. Shervitz was the one who said, maybe you can look into Saybrook. And there were others as well I looked into. But I tell you, that night itself, it was 10 o'clock or something, I came home and I looked at the website for Saybrook. And instantly there was a connection. I don't know what exactly there was that I read, but I was so happy discovering place where I felt, oh, this is it, you know. So that's how I came to Saybrook.
What a great way. It you know, our students often say Saybrook finds them, you know, as opposed to them finding Saybrook in that way. And sounds like you had a little bit of magic on both sides in a very positive way. Yeah, that's great. Can you speak a little bit, you talk about Ayurveda. We've had a couple of guests on the podcast who've talked about Ayurvedic medicine and, you know, what they found it to be. And it sounds to me like you come from a science background. And as you know, Ayurvedic medicine in the U.S. Western construct isn't always well embraced. Can you speak a little bit about what it is and maybe what it isn't and what kind of your understanding of it as you came to embrace it and understand its impact in integrative medicine?
I mean, I, as a research scientist, I was just catering to the body aspects. We were making, you know, things for the body to replace parts and things like that, so in as new products. But Ayurveda is much more holistic. You know, it's actually part of the original Vedas, Atharvana Veda, which describes a way to live in a preventative mode. You know, it talks about self-care to increase longevity. And seriously, the depth of it is such that it goes on to say how you can even achieve your ultimate goal of life, which is self-realization. Or, you know, so it's taking care of the body, the mind, the emotion, every aspect of it. Many people just think it's the herbal part, but it's a very holistic sense. And as you mentioned, in 2002 and 2003, you know, things were just being introduced, and actually there were a lot of pushback also of all these other modalities. They kept calling them alternative medicine because there was not evidence-based. But Ayurveda is actually years of empirical knowledge as well that makes it well-rounded.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When you say we have years of empirical knowledge, it's grounded in that. Tell us a little bit more. What does that look like from your study?
Well, you know, obviously it's ancient, so I was not around to witness it. But what I have heard is it's really observation of nature and effects of things on humans, animals, and so on and so forth that got this kind of wealth of information. And I had the opportunity to learn about Ayurveda through a person whose lineage is Ayurvedic Vaidyas. So I got to appreciate, you know, it's called a Gurukul method, where a student actually lives with the teacher in their teacher home. I mean, obviously I didn't live, but, you know, we kind of surround ourselves in that philosophy of it. And how do I say it? It's a holistic experience. It's not just going to class and learning some theory and so on and so forth. Yeah. So it's a very deep knowledge, wealth of knowledge there. And I was extremely excited about it. In fact, one of the things I felt that when I went to Saybrook, what I would do is, I was hoping to do was bridge the gap between what is available in these ancient wisdom sciences with the modern processes and bring them together. That's what I was hoping to do.
I have more I want to ask you about Ayurvedic medicine, but I want to stay on this thread for a minute around integrative techniques. What is your understanding of how Ayurvedic medicine and Western medicine under the, I guess, guise of empiricism and that scientific approach, so to speak, how is that coming along? I mean, in terms of the relationship, are you seeing more integration of those techniques? And if you are, and if others are, what techniques are being used in standard medicine practice in the U.S. and in the West that you're aware of?
I mean, one component is the herbs that we talk about with Ayurvedic medicine. So there are many things that have come forth, and they might be talked about as Ayurvedic, but like turmeric, ashwagandha, brahmi, all these things are available now for various ailments, for preventative things as well. In terms of modalities, you know, I would say even meditation is part of it. Yoga is a sister science. That's part of it. There are subtle therapies that are going on, aromatherapy, and so on and so forth. Even acupressure, there was marma pressure that was there in Ayurvedic medicine. So a lot of it is coming forth. Maybe it's not labeled as such, but there is embracing of that going on, I feel.
I see. Yeah, we have this discussion in our family occasionally. Yeah, I'm a classic skeptic, but on the other hand, I've always been an advocate of we at least have to test and give the opportunity to try these things out. And in the West, especially since there's so many folks who haven't had the opportunity to experience those, and to your point, anecdotally, and now there are research bases, in fact, and empirical research that have, you know, demonstrated some efficacy around some of these techniques. And yet you can't get to that unless you're doing the studies to do them. And so to your point around, there's all these various sister sciences we found with yoga, with meditation, with others. There are real benefits to short, mid, and long-term health goals that folks are seeing, both mental and physical. So the whole body approach to that. And it just seems like it's a manufactured debate that doesn't need to be had. It's like if we can find things that help people live better, healthier lives, right? Why wouldn't we want to do that?
Exactly. And I want to add, Ayurveda believes in that as well. I mean, the fundamental principle is whatever works is what is the medicine. It's so broad-minded, you know? And I want to just comment on the experimental methods itself. One of the challenges is, now, I used to work as a research chemist as well, and my master's thesis is on isolating compound, isolating a molecule, because that's what allopathic medicine is about, isolating a single molecule, which is very potent, no doubt, but it also tends to have side effects. Whereas in these herbal preparations, it's the whole thing. There is a synergetic effects amongst the components of that, which seems to have less of a side effect because it's not going directly to something. And there's always, you know, it's a cause and effect kind of situation, right? When you have a very potent chemical, something else has to give.
That's so true. That's so true. And I think to that point, no one's saying or suggesting that you can cure cancer with dandelions, but what you are saying is that there are illnesses and other things that can be treated or offset or maybe even symptoms abated. If say you have cancer, you're going to use the best treatment possible to help you get healthier. But you know, this is where the complementary piece comes in. And there are other illnesses that may not need that level of, to your point, the in-depth molecule isolation, right? To get to the core of what you need. It might be something less invasive or less intense, if you will. So maybe trying the least possible impact first and then going up as you need to. I've seen and talked to a number of folks who've talked about the importance of starting with the least invasive, the least impactful in terms of negative effects, and then working your way up to see where you need to, you know, what works and maybe what doesn't.
Right. And unfortunately, with many of these alternative systems, people tend to go there when all else has failed.
Yeah.
And it has happened in my own family too. So it's a hard experiment to follow through and say, does it work or not? So, that's a challenge.
That's a very wise point of view. So don't wait. get diagnosed and start your treatment and your work with your clinicians early if you can. I really appreciate your position on integrative health and medicine. And I think before we get into Aquila Health, which is the kind of the core of what you do, I want to talk for a minute about your time in the Saybrook University program itself. And just very briefly, but what was that experience like for you? How did you initially plan on applying the concepts you learned? Did anything change as you went through the program? Any of that kind of morph for you?
Sure. It was a wonderful 5 years that I was there, a part of the program. And it was very enlightening. You know, just that was when I was going beyond the body kind of thing. I was getting into the mind, emotion, spirit. So it was a very big period of growth for me through this core curriculum and such. I really liked the professors there and my advisors, my dissertation advisors, Dr. Lynn Freeman, Dr. Donald Moss, Dr. David Lukoff. So they were very supportive. I got to take some courses which normally I wouldn't have taken, like the Mythic Path, for example. And I got to work on things like with the forward focus, like in one of the courses, I don't remember which course, but it was the plan to have a symposium for bringing about greater awareness of Ayurveda and other CAM. So it was to think through how are we going to apply it in the world. So that was very good. My degree was in psychology with the focus on health studies. That's what it was called back then. I think it was a precursor of the mind-body medicine program now. So it was really a wonderful program. I want to say, you know, when I did my bachelor's back a long time ago at Rutgers, my initial inclination was to do psychology. But I took those courses and I didn't like how it was taught. It was a huge class. So I dropped it and went into the sciences. So I come back now into this now. So it was a full circle.
Yeah, there you go. We brought you back into the fold, if you will. And I think what's beautiful about your path, I think, as you describe it, is you have merged kind of these, I won't call them separate worlds. They really are overlapping worlds. I mean, psychology is definitely a science. It is also an art. I know some psychologists may disagree with that, but you're bringing those scientific disciplines together in a way that can have real impact and benefit for your community, which I think is just terrific.
Thank you. And I want to add too, as I mentioned to you, the energy, medicine, and spirit was heightened in me, but also there was some very practical lessons that I learned. For example, stress and how it can lead to chronic, it's a contributor to chronic diseases, which is what our world is facing it right now. Stress being so critical in managing. But the thing is, I also learned there are tools to manage it. So through this program. So both of them, very important, I feel. And I myself went through, you know, I'm one of those, I guess I learned things and I put it into practice in my own life, that I would say, you know, my son went off to college when I was starting this program. And by the time he finished his college, I finished my college, our household was different at that time. It was, so I think there was a very much a life application involved as well, a Saber education.
All minds growing at the same time. That's a beautiful thing to see happen in real time. That's great. Well, let's talk about Aquila Health for just a few minutes, because I know this is your passion. You've built this organization. And by the way, you can find Aquila Health, A-K-H-I-L-A, online. You can also donate to it. So I'm going to put that out there now, as it's a nonprofit. So don't forget to think about when you make your gift to Saybrook University. For our audience members, also make a gift to Aquila Health. Tell us a little bit about your organization and its mission, the purpose, the values, and then we'll get in a little bit about how it's grown over the years and what you're doing today. So go ahead.
Aquila Health is a nonprofit, a 501c3 nonprofit. We are based in California at this point, but this work can be done everywhere. First of all, the word Aquila itself is very important, I guess, for me. Aquila means whole or complete in Sanskrit, which is that ancient Indian language. So that is what we are about, holistic health. That's our tagline. So we started in 2015. We were incorporated in 2015. And our mission is basically to promote holistic health, but through stress management workshop. That's the umbrella we use. To underserved women. That's our population. And what we do is our workshops are not just giving theories and, examples and things like that, but it's also we facilitate such that we harness the inner resources of these underserved women so that they themselves are motivated to lead a more productive life and have a brighter future. So that is our mission. And in terms of purpose, I would say it's threefold. One is to promote this holistic health, which I've gone through with the kosha. It's all about koshas here. Second thing, it's to address this underserved population. You know, when I was working at the Institute of Health and Healing in that study, we found that, you know, there are many people who want these CAM modalities, integrative modalities. But it's really the well-to-do who are able to afford it, because it's still out of pocket. And the underserved population gets left out. But they deserve it even more so in many cases, because they haven't had that time of self-care and so on and so forth, preventative maintenance, and they are in this tough, challenging situation. They need to cope with it. So women, underserved population is the one. And then women is another thing. We feel they're more receptive, not generalizing it, but that's what we found. And since our workshops are group-oriented, we also found that if they were only women, they opened up more. They were more receptive, because a major part of the workshop is to engage them in participation, because once they speak something, that's going to be something that's going to motivate them to change. So, and also, quite honestly, if the woman changes, likely it's going to be passed on to the children and the family and so on and so forth. Not to generalize, I'm not saying that, but generally, you know, it happens. So those are the three aspects that we focus on.
You bring up a really important aspect around access, especially to integrative health care. And I'm going to kind of get even more specific around integrative mental health care. I'm doing a tour. It's going to be about a two-year tour this coming year for Saybrook. So it's the idea is it's an integrative mental health for all tour. And when I was so excited you were coming on this episode, because I think right now, more than ever, we're needing to talk about access to, yes, integrative care and also mental health services, right? Because there's such a growing need. There's a gaping hole where providers and the numbers and the actual demand. Can you talk a little bit, you know, about the access piece, especially with integrative services? I know there's all sorts of issues with insurance and with government subsidies and support for these, but what's your perspective on access and how do we build that out a bit more going forward?
I think people like you and organizations are the way to move forward. I was in New Mexico once, and they are very much into bringing this kind of care into the indigenous population, the Native American population. So that's the thing that's going on. There are people who are working on this to bring to these underserved population, the homeless population, and so on and so forth. But when we have worked in the homeless shelters and such, there is not a lot of this going on. You know, at the homeless shelter, to give you an example, they do have caseworkers. They do have psychologists who provide them. But from what I've heard from a homeless person themselves, it's like, it's superficial. It's, you know, it's something that they, it's state subsidized and so on and so forth. It's not in depth. They are afraid of what they will say and what will be written in their records and so on and so forth. So I think the value of integrative health is it has the potential to provide long-term change, but by learning these tools, I think that's valuable. But in the homeless shelter that we have gone, there aren't other programs like that going on. So, you know, we may talk about integrative health, but they're not having access to it.
That's such a great point. And I mean, I think when you and I, you know, if we talk about kind of the impact it's had on our own lives, whether it's meditation or hypnosis or, you know, functional nutrition or the work we do in the space of whatever area, subdiscipline of integrative medicine, it's had a pretty powerful impact on just emotional regulation, right? In terms of just how I live my life. And I'm sure, I don't want to speak for you, but clearly it's had an impact for you. You wouldn't have started this fabulous nonprofit had you not. And I think when we talk about the benefits to the population, you hit the nail on the head. I think it goes to, we need psychologists, social workers, counselors to have that kind of piece of the triage. I know it can feel very surface level, but it's that the sustainability piece, right? I think that's what you're hinting at, is the feeling of and the need for tools that can help folks manage through the daily stressors of life, to find ways in which to not just cope, but thrive beyond the therapy session or the group sessions that they may be having, and ways in which to sort of navigate through life's complexities. Would you say that's a fair assessment? And maybe I'm oversimplifying here too. So I'd be curious what other thoughts you have on that.
Yeah, I think this is a very complex issue, but I want to digress with a little twist here. I think whatever we do, it has to come from a very, I mean, I'm being very loose here, but it has to come from love. It has to come from that connection. This is what we're talking about, humanistic. You know, you have to treat them as somebody who is innately good, who has the growth potential, not just a case. You know, what I'm trying to say is you have to get into their heart.
Fair point. Yes.
When you are able to touch them at that core, that is where real healing or real impact is going to be. And nothing to say against psychologists, because they are, or the caseworkers, they are doing what they have to do. But I guess what I'm trying to say is we need time and dedication. I'm not saying we are changing doing miraculous things, but we do, when we do interact with them, we do see a glimmer of hope here and there. And with more extended instances like that, there's more potential. So I think when you talk about making a change, maybe look deeper to find programs which are going to be more impactful. That's what I would say. I would say find things where you can touch them. It's all about, you know, what if you're talking about humanistic or transpersonal, whatever, you know, that's our strength. That's where we have to come from.
That's such a great reminder. That's such a great, great focus too for us, you know, especially given our focus collectively between the institutions and your organization. Yeah, that's terrific. When you talk about the work you do at Aquila Health, can you give an example of some of the programs that you've put on and maybe a couple, whether they're success stories or maybe they're not success stories, but you've seen those glimmers of hope or, you know, that shine that you're talking about in an individual. Maybe talk a little bit about that for a moment.
I think, you know, it's actually multifold. It's the impact we have on clients, impact on us who are providing. So the impact on clients, I remember, you know, even before I started on this field in this Aquila Health track, as a research scientist, I worked and did some pilot studies. And that's what helped me say, okay, this is the way to go. So I used to go there to the shelters and, you know, a group of us met. And I think they were just happy somebody was listening to them. Somebody was not talking down to them, you know. So I think at the end of the classes, this was pre-pandemic, many times they would come and hug me in the end and saying, thank you so much. You know, they appreciated that, I guess, the closeness that we developed in that 1 hour. Or even simple things like, you know, when you go to a homeless shelter, it's a very challenging situation. Obviously, we can all empathize. But even living at the shelter is hard for them at times because they don't know who to trust. They have one, for example, they have one refrigerator where they can put their things. They will be guarding those little things so much. You know, they'll see if it's missing, they'll be accusing others. You know, they don't have a good rapport. They're there for 3 months or something. They're not creating that bond. But during these classes, they got to understand who the other person was. And they said, okay, you have this experience. Next week, why don't you come to my church? Why don't we go for a walk? So there was creation of a social support, which is so much needed, so they're not alone. So, you know, that's an example of how I felt. And of course, our facilitators have their own examples that they can share. We do take surveys at the end of the classes, and we know the clients have been impacted. We hear from them afterwards also. So anecdotal comments and things like that. So we know they're impacted. And I mentioned about facilitators themselves. I personally, you know, it's a 45-minute drive for me to go to a shelter. After going to one of these shelters and on the way home, I was feeling so satisfied and fulfilled. I could connect with somebody, make an impact. You know, you talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I could do a couple of them there just by going there and being of service and giving of myself whatever. I didn't know what was going to happen in the class, but whatever it is, being present. So those are some examples I can share.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And during the sessions themselves, were you... Sounds like there was a lot of human connections, a lot of dialogue, a lot of conversation. Were you also doing guided imagery? What were some of the techniques you were employing during these times?
You know, this field of integrative health or holistic health is very vast. And I would say guided imagery is one of those favorite things that I like and many of the facilitators like as well. So we actually have a grid of workshops that we can have. And during the pandemic, we actually had to put it in PowerPoint presentations. So we have at least 26 of them right now, which uses different aspects. You know, we talk about emotional intelligence, so there are things for the mental. And as you alluded to, it's the mental and emotion things that they are dealing with, struggling with the most. So we focus a lot on that. So we have done yoga, we have done meditation, we have done guided imagery, we have done mind jars, you know, plenty of things, breathing exercises, body scans, lots of tools that we can use. And there's many more that we can still use. Like we have Qigong as well, anything.
So a whole set of tools to implement here and some really beautiful examples of outcomes that you've been seeing, not only for the clients that you're serving, but for you. I mean, that seems like and your facilitators, that's just what a tremendous way to be in that space.
And Dr. Long, it's not just about giving tools. It's the, as I mentioned, presence. They might ask about arts and crafts because that relaxes them. And what's the objective from our end? When they are relaxed, they're going to open up. So it's really understanding what is there, what is needed at that moment, what is needed for that particular population, and so on and so forth.
That's great. So what's next for you? As you think about Aquila Health's future and how you're positioning it, what are you hopeful for, say, in the next 5 years?
I think it's basically to spread more and more as much as possible. And for that, I would ask for help from Saybrook community, which they're already helping. The students are helping, the alumni. So I think in terms of workshops, I told you that there's so much more we can do. Because I remember going one whole year, just going every other week or so. And depending on what they say, we can talk about it. And we went to ultimately through the end of the year with the same client population, you could go as deep as understanding who you are because it comes from naturally, you know, as you graduate. So the workshops are very broad that we can do. And also we can go deeper. Like I mentioned about Ayurveda, let's talk about aromatherapy. Let's talk about everything that can help you. So broader and deeper. Similarly with the places we serve. Right now, we're serving at homeless shelters, women's shelters, places where they have pregnant women and young mothers. We help people who are going through cancer diagnosis or treatment or post-cancer. So all these places we're serving, there are many more places we could serve as well.
So many more. Yes. The ideas are like, yes, I'm sure they're brimming over for you and your team. And we'll have to talk more. So for our fellow Saybrookians who are listening and for our broader audience, this is an opportunity to get in touch with Aquila Health to both support monetarily, but also programmatically. This isn't a fundraising episode, I promise, but the mission that you're doing, Prema, is so powerful. And it resonates so deeply, I think, with the mission and values of Saybrook. Just very, very proud of the work you're doing as an alumna. It's meaningful. This strikes, frankly, at the core. We were just talking, or I was just speaking with our board of trustees back in May. You're the exemplar of so many of our alumni who are out there doing this work that is truly impacting communities. And you're not asking for praise and awards and all that, but you're doing this work that is meaningful work that is uplifting the human condition with your fellow human beings, with women who are in need. And I just want to call you out for that and let you know you're appreciated and that your university is embracing you. And we hope to be able to do more for you and Aquila Health and your community. So thank you so much. Before we go today, though, you have two final questions that every guest has to answer, and they're fun. So it shouldn't be too bad. But the first question is, what does the word humanistic mean to you?
I think we've talked about it over our talk, but holistic is the first thing that comes, and then appreciating the uniqueness of each and every individual. And understanding their good, their growth, and we all understand somewhere along the way we're on this journey to realize who we are. So I think that's and if I had more time, I'd tell you how Aquila Health is embodying every aspect of it. And it's truly a Saybrook child, I think, this Aquila Health.
That's an A-plus answer in my book on humanistic and applying that to your current work. That's really great. The second question is, what are three takeaways a member of our audience can do right now to improve their physical or mental well-being or both?
Well, first step is awareness. Awareness of who, what you are. I mean, what is your strength? What is your weakness? Who are you? And accept who you are. Accept it. The second step is prioritize self-care. This is a sacred being that you are. you need to prioritize to take care of yourself. Of course, through all these CAM modalities, there's plenty of way for body, mind, spirit, everything. The third thing is, I personally have learned a hard way, is when something is amiss, do pay attention to it and fix it. Like, you know, I had a fracture in my leg many, many years ago. I didn't take care of it. Now I have to suffer for it. And it could be said about mental too, right? Because you can go through traumatic experiences. If you don't go through that and deal with it, it haunts you forever.
So true.
So that's what many of these women are going through. We can see that.
And it ties right back to the awareness piece and being present and also taking action. Gosh, really great wisdom today, Prema. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here. You're an inspiration to me and to so many others. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And I could, if I could say, you know, my mother, when I started my Seabrook thing, she said, you know, when somebody does a noble job, the universe supports you. And I'm so grateful for so many people who have supported me. My husband, the board, and wonderful board members. We have Julie Serrato, Dr. Julie Serrato, and Dr. Celine Kumin Vega are part of the team. Facilitators, many of them are Seabrook people, you know, Seabrook students. And they tell me, you know, one of them told me she's learning things in class, but she's able to apply it here, you know, what she's learning. So it's a beautiful community that we have, and the clients themselves. So I think I'd love for us all to be a family and help each other. And you, thank you so much for inviting me, you know, moving the thing forward. Thank you so much.
Well, that's the easy part, because I get to work with people like you. Seriously, it makes my job 100% wonderful and beautiful. So thank you. Before we go, where can folks find Akila Health on the web?
Go to, as you mentioned, www.akilahealth.org, akilahealth.org.
Prema Rao, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Long.
Prema, great job. Thank you so much. That was really informative, and I enjoyed the scope of our conversation. I hope all of you enjoyed Prema as much as I did. Remember her three major takeaways. I think these are just fabulous. Be aware. Be aware of who you are, your strengths, your weaknesses, and accept those. Accept you for who you are. Number two, prioritize self-care. That's part of the sacredness of who we are as individuals. And third, when something is amiss, pay attention and get to it. I think that's good advice for all of us, indeed. If you want to see the YouTube version of this podcast, please visit our Seabrook YouTube page. If you'd like to support the podcast, go to Apple iTunes and leave that 5-star rating and review, and subscribe so you can get episodes as they come out. If you're on Spotify, leave that 5-star rating and make sure to follow us. You can, of course, subscribe to us on most other major podcast platforms, including Google, Stitcher, Pandora, and others. Remember to check our show notes for information on Prema Rao, including links to websites, books, and the like. And for more about our university, go to www.saybrook.edu. Click on Areas of Study at the top of the page and locate the program of your choice to learn more. Or simply Google Seabrook University. That's it for today. Thank you, everyone. Take care.